up this morning with the sun down shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning.
Hello, North Bay Stacks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 20. NASDAQ Futures up 84, which sounds good and I guess is good, except it's a mere pittance of how much we were down yesterday. Yesterday was a clunker of a day. We'll go through that when we do the break, but we were down 100 in the SPOOs, which is, you know, that's very rare. I think we were down almost 500 in the NASDAQ, so not good. Do we have Mr. Kevin?
Yeah, good morning. Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Ricky. Good morning, listeners.
Morning.
Did you have your putsch yesterday?
No. I had my pudding. Is that good?
Well, you know, at a certain age, pudding is good.
Please, sir. More, may I have more pudding?
Yes. I'm sitting here reading about this Sun Micro. Turns out these guys just became their auditors in 2023. They replaced Deloitte and Touche and Ernst & Young. The guy said yesterday the exact words were unwilling to be associated with the financial statements prepared by management. Well, there you go.
They're a publicly traded company, are they not?
Yep. Well, as a matter of fact, they're in the S&P.
So if they have misleading financial statements, isn't that doesn't Sarbanes-Oxley allow for jail time there?
I'm not sure who's making the call. People from China or where? Maybe, I don't know if these guys want to, I don't know the whole details. It'd be nice to know, but since when did they put anybody, any big shot in jail? Sarbanes-Oxley. Little guys, maybe.
I understand.
I honestly don't know.
Maybe we should be looking at some things here.
Where's Lou when we need him? I don't know if those are felonies or not. I think they probably are, but I'm not sure.
Let's put it this way: the CEO and CFO are responsible for filing financial statements that materially reflect the actual financial position of the company.
Correct.
There's a little margin for error, but now you have an accounting firm saying, reading between the lines, of course, they're saying, no, not even close.
I don't think people's, matter of fact, I'm pretty sure this is true, but I don't think people's forecasts are part of the audits, right? So a CEO can come out and say, next year looks terrific, like all these guys do, and that's not, like the guy from Intel yesterday was on to talk about a salesman, how great Intel's doing. Intel actually came out with earnings, the stock is up $1, but you talk to him, it sounds like they're going to be, these guys are like a third of the price they were in 2000, for God's sake. They talk to him, you know, the thing's going to be back to, you know, whatever, what price in like 2 weeks. I don't know what he's looking at, but whatever. I don't think any of that, you can do it, but you're talking about the actual statements of what did happen. And you're mm-hmm. And I don't know how you... I'm not even sure how the string is between a company that's...
But isn't that the statement you mentioned at the outset, that they don't want any part of these right. financial statements?
I wonder if it was if the internal audit people brought it up to them, if the audit committee brought it up to them, or they just looked at this and said, you guys are all crooks. I mean, I don't know.
They just gone crazy and gotten astute all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean, of course we have, you know, some people that are kind of bitter about auditors in general, And they're just saying, well, I got auditors are in there just for the money. They don't care with it. I think they do care. I mean,
did you say they just changed a year ago from Deloitte?
Yeah, but I don't think.
I wonder how long Deloitte was their auditor.
That's a good question.
Because it is definitely a bad sign if you're looking at a company and they change auditors too quickly on a regular basis. Once you see them change auditor again, they're shopping for opinions. They're shopping for. I think that might be an indicator right there.
Well, if we ever changed our auditors, you know, because securities firms all have to be audited. I mean, FINRA would have a, I don't know what they would do, they'd have a cow over it. We'd have to essentially prove to them that the auditors didn't quit because we were idiots. You know, I mean, it's, I don't know why they get involved, but they get involved in everything.
You certainly get to, I always thought it was good practice to change auditors periodically, but periodically means 5 years, 7 years, something like that, so that you don't get too incestuous a relationship. But other than that, if you're doing it every year, that's not healthy.
Well, it also locks you into the fee. I mean, these guys, they don't. I think I'm pretty good friends with the guy who runs the place, but they don't. That doesn't make any difference in the audit. They've become the regulators. I mean, they'll actually tell you, one guy quit 2 years ago. He said, I didn't start out to be a regulator. They have to follow all the FINRA rules to do the audit. It's not just accounting rules. I mean, it's and then if they were to say, hey, guess what? You see this inflation thing? We're tripling your fee this year. And Dan goes, my president of PTI goes, well, that seems a lot. He's not even really free to find somebody else. Because FINRA will be basically up his behind. What are you doing? Why are you doing it? What's the matter? I mean,
why are you doing it is the right question to ask. You know, are you doing it because you don't like that they're challenging you on some things that may be material or may be unethical or whatever? But on the other hand, if you don't like them because you just have a really crappy working relationship with them, and every time you sit down for a closing meeting, it's contentious when it doesn't have to be. Okay, then change auditors.
Well, I'm talking about what if it's a simple, they're charging too much, probably isn't a legitimate answer to FINRA.
Oh, no, it is. It is. You get to shop price a little bit. I don't know what FINRA...
That's what I'm
FINRA's
saying.
Rest of the world, but you know, it certainly is legitimate to say that, you know, their fee is too high.
It's a red flag for a bunch of 25-year-olds with nothing better to do. Anyway, hey, should we have a award every Friday like "Stupid Is as Stupid Does," as Forrest Gump used to say? If you from time to time, and I'm certainly not asking you to opine on it or listen about it, but every for some reason, News Radio 78 has this thing going with. There's a. You ever heard of a Top Golf? I haven't.
I know what Top Golf is. Yeah,
what is it?
It's just a golf place. You know, you can go. They have like driving ranges and all that kind of crap. It's a chain of, you know, golf, basically golf restaurants.
Well, there's a Top Golf in Naperville, and last like a year ago, I'm listening to a couple of these news reports. Was for some reason. Some off-duty cop is walking through the place on a 90-degree day. He kind of glances in a couple cars, and he sees, like, loaded guns sitting on the front seat. So they wait, and, like, they arrest a couple guys. Yesterday they arrest another guy. It's the 23rd guy in the last year that has a loaded gun sitting on the passenger seat while the guy's in the golf place. Can't even put it under his... What is with these guys? they must know... But A, it's a really dumb thing to do. And B, there's been somebody there, they actually have like an off-duty cop once in a while just walks through and looks at people's cars. What, do they do it just to challenge people or what?
I don't know what to tell you. So who was the cop who was checking it?
Well, I mean, they from time to time...
Was it the the local police, or was it security for?
I think originally it was just an off-duty cop happened to walk to his car from whatever you do in Top Golf, hit some balls. He comes out, and one guy had his window open or something. But the local guy, the security guard, just walks around and looks because it's happened so often. Sure enough, there's one sitting there. They wait, and four guys come out and they arrest the guy. But I do not have one, but I took a concealed carry class. Let me help you. Sitting on the passenger seat is not what you're supposed to do. Duh.
Yeah, no kidding.
just crazy stuff. What'd you make of the...
When you think of Top Golf, just think of it as a bar and restaurant where they try to get people to come and hit golf balls at their driving range. And, it's like a lot of places. It's, they need a reason for people to come to your place, and once you give them a reason to come to your place, they're going to spend a lot of money on other stuff.
You know the concept that I thought was actually pretty clever and might actually work on a limited scale? Some guy tried to hook a bar up with a laundromat, which I think is an absolute natural. And I don't think that ever...
Yeah.
That worked.
That has caught on at some places.
Not Chicago, I don't know, but it makes all the sense in the world. Put the stuff in the wash, go watch a football game, have a beer. To me, that's perfect.
And you can go in and you can watch a ball game and have a beer if you don't have laundry to do. But if you do, you double up on getting that done. You know what I drove by yesterday? Because I'm in Indianapolis this morning. What I drove by yesterday was a laundromat and tanning beds.
Oh, good.
With tanning beds. So if you like to do tanning, you can go while your wash is running in the washer or the dryer, you can go get your suntan.
I still my laundromat.
I've never done that, by the way. God, I wonder what that's like.
What, getting the tan?
Yeah.
They had a tanning bed here at our club when it first started, and I did it like once. It's kind of weird. It's like you're in a coffin.
Doesn't sound like something I would enjoy.
No, but it actually a couple of listeners that are showing friends of mine that have the really white Irish skin, they were actually able to.
That's redundant.
Yeah, well, but so not all Irish people are like that. But some people are just really have real difficulty any kind of tanning, and they actually.
I don't tan. I pink.
Yeah, well, it actually helped. Help some of those people out if they're going to go somewhere or something. They actually can get a little bit of a tan. I don't know. I'm not a dermatologist, but there is some use of it that I guess is okay, but you got to be careful as well. One guy, somehow or another, they had ribs in there with the tanning lights in the middle of the two like structural ribs. So the first time you did it, you come out striped. which is kind of weird. But,
just call me Tiger.
Yeah, it's a. I mean, it's kind of an odd sort of deal. But what did you? Carl had mentioned a little bit about, yesterday this SMCI. He thinks it's going to end up. I mean, if these guys, go out of business or something, SMCI, which I'm not really calling for. But the stock's down from 110 to 20 something. Is that going to impact NVIDIA, and is it a bigger piece of the AI stuff? Now, last night we had Amazon came out and said that AI has been accretive to them. They're the first place that is essentially opined that they've saved money by using AI. I didn't hear the guy's whole story last night, but their stock's up $12 today. So that's out of the big earnings the last couple of days, they're like the only good one. Now, Microsoft's bounced back a little today at $4. It was down like, I don't know, 12 or 15 yesterday. And we've got... Apple's down 366, even though the guy came out and... I mean, these after earnings shows these guys put on, I mean, it's like, God, it's like going to the county fair, for God's sake. But Amazon did come out and say that the AI, whatever they're doing with the AI, has helped them cut costs. So their stock is a big positive reaction today.
The question with that, Tom, is what do they mean by AI? What are they doing with it?
Well, they're not going to explain that. Come on.
So if you're talking, when you say AI, you get a lot of people that think, oh, it's Skynet. They're taking over the world. You know, the robots are going to take over and do everything for us. And we are so far from that that it's ridiculous. Now, if they're telling you they are using some computer-driven algorithms to do work faster than humans can do it. Yeah, there's lots of applications like that, whether it's pulling together research, whether it is, you know, you go tell it to say, here's a subject, I want you to create a PowerPoint for me because I have to do a presentation. There's all kinds of things like that, and they are time savers. And if you're skilled with it and you're smart enough to check the results, because it ain't perfect and it doesn't always get things right, then yeah, you can do some time saving stuff and spread across a company as big as Amazon is. I would imagine that they are getting some benefit out of it, but that, you know, okay, but I still want to ask that question: is what do you mean by AI? What you're really saying is we're using automation, and it's no different than many of the other applications for automation that people use in, you know, it's like putting robots in your production line. Is that AI? No, but it's computerized, and they sure do a whole lot of things faster and more accurately than humans can do it.
Well, here's the key points by Annie Palmer, from writes for CNBC. Amazon's capital expenditures jumped 81% in the third quarter from a year early. That's a lot. CEO Andy Jassy, there's the name, reassured shareholders that the company expects to make money on the investments, which are primarily tied to generative artificial intelligence. Generative. There you go.
Yeah.
I think our customers...
That's what I just described.
Yeah. I think our customers, the business, and our shareholders will feel good about this long-term. We're aggressively pursuing it, Jassy said on the earnings call. So his line of BS people are believing. Now, whether it's BS or not, time will tell. But he's got the stock up a few bucks. So...
Garbage.
Oh, God.
There you go. Welcome in, Carl. Go ahead. Fire away.
But he,
well, all right. So I buy things sometimes on Zon because they have the cheapest price. And this so-called innovation that they have implemented is that if you go on their app on your phone and you look at something, or if you go on their site on your computer, but you're signed on your account so they know who you are, and you look at something and you don't buy it, about 30 minutes later, your phone will bing up with a notification. Would you like to have a second look?
Really?
Now, by the way, it will do this. Here's the reason it's not actually intelligent. I'll give you an example. My daughter has this little cube computer that she uses when she's traveling because it needs very little power, and it is a perfectly usable workstation for somebody doing remote work.
I have no idea what a cube computer is. What is it?
It's about the size of two packs of cigarettes put next to each other. It runs Windows. It has a screen of some kind. It's a marvel of engineering, really. I mean, this is Chief, I talk about the fact that technology always gets cheaper for the same capability, right? And smaller and uses less energy. And this is why AI will eventually collapse for those people who bought it early and didn't make any money with it. Because it happens with every kind of technology. It doesn't matter what it is. But from the consumer's point of view, this is a really, really good thing. Okay? I mean, so they sell and they're all Chinese, of course. But there are these tiny little things that you could, if you were in an office, if you were outfitting an office, you could take a monitor, bolt one of these things to the back, and now you have a package that you could slam on somebody's desk and say, you know, here's your workstation. You can't game with them. They're not, you know, they're not up to that kind of a standard. But for typical office work, they're fabulous. And the big thing from her standpoint is that because she works from the road, she can sit in her van and it draws very little power, which means being on a generator or being on an inverter is a viable strategy. Okay, so now you can work from anywhere, literally on top of a mountain. As long as you can get a signal out, you can work from wherever you are. Well, the company that I used to buy these kinds of machines, but in a different form factor and build a custom software load to use as firewalls, which of course is very useful in the computer security world. Okay.
Yeah.
COVID killed them because of supply chain problems. And they were actually, they were out of Switzerland, and they made a nice little, in a metal case box, no fan, so insanely reliable. I mean, like, these things never puke because there's nothing to break. They boot off a little SD card like you'd put in a camera, and so they're power safe. You can yank the cord out of the wall, nothing bad happens. They are, and again, they use almost no electricity, and they're fantastic little appliances, and they have two network ports. That's the key item, is that you have to have one for the outside that goes to the internet and another one that goes to your stuff. And I have published the disk image that you can load onto a cart and use these things and, you know, plug them in and whatever. I can't get them anymore. And I have customers that have wanted to use them over the years. Well, COVID killed the company that made them.
Really? Wow.
Well, it's just supply chain stuff. They couldn't get the parts to assemble them, okay? So, I mean, this is one of the side effects of the stupidity that was worldwide.
Sounds like Carl's new business.
Well, it wasn't
Carl's new business. But, yeah. But what you know, what you're really saying is they got a lot of capital tied up in this business, and all of a sudden they can't generate any revenue. So,
well,
whatever space they have, whatever investment is just sitting there. And with nothing coming in, and
oh no, they were destroyed, Kevin. Yeah, they were destroyed. Okay, so yeah. So now, you know, I have some people that have these things that, I mean, these other designs have been out there for, you know, for 15 years, right, in one form or another. I mean, they've gotten better over time, but before COVID, you know. So I've been hunting around for, okay, you know, when somebody has one of these things break or they want another one, what do I tell them to buy, right? And the answer may be one of these little cubes. The problem is it has to have two network interfaces on it, not one. And there aren't very many of them that do. So, and this is the part that these so-called intelligent systems don't have. They are not intelligent. They're stupid. Because Amazon has spammed me for the last 2 weeks. Because I dug around on their site for a while trying to find something that had two network interfaces. And by the way, I need specific ones because some of them are full of bugs, and the very last thing you need is one of these things that disconnects when you're on the internet, right? And so it's like, well, there's a handful of them out there that have interfaces that have known problems, and I'm not about to fork up. I mean, they're not all that expensive, but I'm not about to fork up a couple $100 just to find out it's a complete piece of crap. So I don't want one that has those ones that potentially have that problem. And that's why I was browsing those things on the site. And Chief, for the last literally 2 weeks, every single effing day, I get spammed by these guys for this. If they think this is going to actually generate sales, they're out of their minds.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you, let's talk about that for a second. How much do you think when people just keep constantly badgering somebody, they must know that at some point it turns people off, not on? I mean, if you do it intelligently, and it's one or two, and it was something you were looking for, and they found something and sent you, that you were looking for, and you didn't find it, and they sent you like one ad that has the thing that you actually did want, that might be okay. I used to think that when Google,
but see, Chief, that's the problem, is that they're not analyzing the machine cannot think. Okay, this is the basic problem you have. If you had a human looking at my stream of what I was looking at, you might be able to deduce from that the reason I'm looking at 15 different ones of these things and I didn't buy one is that there was something about the ones that made them unsuitable. Okay, the ones that I looked at, and maybe I missed the one that is suitable. Maybe if you could deduce what that is, you might sell me something.
Well, didn't I'm going
to and what you're saying is that's human. So humans can call you up and badger you and say, are you sure you really want to abandon all that search? And so we're having a computer do that and calling it artificial intelligence. Okay, yeah, it's doing what the human would have done, but is it really going far enough to anticipate your need and come back to you with a solution? And that it's not doing. And
but a human, know, but Kevin,
and it could, and it, you know, that's programmable too, at least.
Well, actually, no, it's not. That's the whole problem, is that the machine has to be able to go out of scope. It has to be able to deduce from what I looked at. It has to be able to deduce that the reason I didn't buy one is because there's something missing and what's different. And then, okay, what do we have that is kind of in this general view and yet there's a difference? And what might I be trying to find that I didn't find? And that is out of scope processing. And computers have never, never in the history of machines have they demonstrated out of scope processing. You can do it. I can look at your structure and I can say, you know, he's looked at like four of these things that have two network interfaces. Now, why didn't he pick one of those when he immediately clicked away from all the ones that only had one? Okay, well, he obviously wants something that has two interfaces, but there's a reason why. And then you start thinking about that for a while. You roll around your head and you say, hey, wait a minute, they all have the same chipset. Maybe there's something wrong with that chipset.
Okay, and I totally agree with you. So what could they do with this that at least advances the use of automation? Because as far as I'm concerned, this is all just garden variety automation. It's not
right. The problem is Kevin,
special,
but that's the problem, Kevin. You can't, because it can't think. And what it needs to do to sell to me in that situation is to be able to think.
What
and
you guys are making the assumption.
Well, to think or to ask questions. You know, I mean, that to me, that would be the next level. Okay, you did some searching, didn't buy. What was missing? If you could describe it, I suppose you could turn it loose to say, well, let me see if I can find something, not necessarily on Amazon. But that we're so far off of that that it's, you know.
Well, that's right. And that's the problem, is that it can't, you know, people look at these like chat programs, ChatGPT and stuff. And, you know, essentially it's prompted, right? You ask it a question and, you know, Musk is running around talking about, well, you know, upload your MRIs and X-rays to this thing, which by the way, is the stupidest thing ever. If somebody actually does that, that's the dumbest thing you could ever imagine, because once that kind of thing gets into someone's data stream, you're never going to get it out of there, and you just gave them information that they can use against you. That's insanely dumb. But in the buying paradigm, yeah, if the machine could deduce this, or if it just came back and said, hey, we noticed you looked at, you know, 15 of these things, you didn't buy it, why not? And if you told it why not, and then it says, oh, okay, well, we do have one of those. Because that's one of the things about Amazon, is they have so much crap on there that actually finding what you're looking for sometimes is hard.
Well, I mean, yep. You guys have kind of wandered in the area where it's just for you looking, but it may not be at all. Well, here's what the summary, well, not at all, but the company is rushing to invest in data centers, networking gear, and hardware to meet vast demand for the technology. So clearly they're planning to sell it to somebody, which has exploded in popularity. But how much of it is what they consider to be, like, again, you got to define AI, as Kevin said, how much of it is just helping them out, making their distribution system more efficient? It has nothing to do with you at all.
Well, some of it, Chief, but the thing is this, is that there's two things. One is that obviously if it optimizes the routes for your drivers or something like that, you know, I mean, but that's technology that we've had for quite a long time. And by the way, UPS has been using it forever. They have found that left turns, for example, both slow the drivers down and greatly increase the probability of crashes. And so their routing software that their system uses does its best to avoid drivers having to make left turns. And they will actually, and I mean, that kind of thing can be analyzed and weighted, and, you know, you can take all the data in, but that's not intelligence. That's just data sieving, which is, computers are really good at that.
Actually,
that's
what
they do.
That was, I did, believe it or not, I took a course on this, Carl, not you, me. That was one of the most difficult problems in all of mathematics, is the salesman coloring problem.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what? I mean, think back to what was one of the biggest and best was yield management for airlines with Sabre.
Yeah, well, I mean, but think of an airline. That's even harder because you can't show up with a half a pilot.
Well, that's right, but the thing is that, you know, yield management, I mean, the fuel to fly that plane is expensive, and figuring out how many of them you ought to fly and what things and at what price, that's the whole difference.
I can see Kevin doing
business.
Kevin, you guys ever talk about that in class. I remember this guy putting this guy who was teaching me integer programming and network flows. Can you two guys imagine me in a class like that? There was me and like 8 PhD students that already had their jobs at Mobil and Exxon. Then there's me. What in God's name am I doing in here? It didn't work out well grade-wise.
You were just auditing the class, weren't you?
When you're in business school, you just tried to get out. You didn't audit anything. So that semester, I got 4 A's and a D in this one. And there went my dean's list. But I mean, the every single problem we discussed was too difficult to solve. You just set them up. But if you walked into class, I mean, most of your students, because I didn't, you walked in and then you said, here's PTI Securities, and we're going to go see, you know, 50 clients in the Chicago area in the next 2 days or day, and you put where all the clients are all around, you know, the couple county area, and you say, okay, what's the best route to take to minimize your gas and time? It sounds like it's pretty easy. It's one of the most difficult problems there ever were, right, Carl?
Yeah, that is where numerical, but there is an answer. There is a definitive answer that numerical analysis. I know you say there's not, this is one of the big problems is, and this is true for so many things that we think we know and we really don't. Okay, in medicine, it's a huge problem too. Is that if you the outcomes in medicine, for example, are in fact deterministic. We just don't have all the inputs.
It's a branch of mathematics that I was never good at.
But it's the same problem with most. I mean, this is anything you apply. I mean, you know, anything that has a deterministic outcome. If you can get enough of the input, if you can get all the inputs, you can determine the outcome. The problem is getting all the inputs accurately enough is really hard.
But most mathematics. I mean, the stuff that I was pretty good at. There was an answer. You know, I could get to the answer.
Right.
The part that, I mean, Kevin, what they do with this, they you start in one direction, you make a couple terms, and you pivot back and pivot over, and it's this massive mathematical sampling.
Sounds like the hokey pokey.
Yeah. It's not. There's no, like, you know, when you put this one's 2 miles, this one's 4 miles, it's 8 miles. There's no way you can just say, oh, here's the formula. You have to try it. Like it's like a mouse in a maze. You have to have the computer power to try it how many different times. Every time you try something, if it's better, you keep sneaking to the next spot, right? Or something along those lines. It's really hard to do. I don't think you can do it. I don't think a person can do it manually, can they?
Well, I do think there are such things. You can do it manually with enough time. I mean, you know, isn't that what computers do for us, though?
Well, yeah.
They do things. They just do what we can do faster. And that's fine. That's a completely fine application. We just call a lot of that AI now. Which is, again, you know, you can call it what you want to call it. But I think an understanding of where we are on that is really important, especially if you're going to be an investor.
Well, at least we're not still calling it cloud.
Well, cloud's something completely different.
It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Oh, God.
Cloud is renting space on somebody else's computer.
No, I'm on CNBC 3 years ago, cloud is the same as AI. You got to have it. And it was 6 years ago, it was China. Even though they're all different, you got to. If you weren't involved in China, you weren't any good. If you weren't involved in cloud, you're not any good. And if you're not AI, you're not. It's the same thing.
Well, cloud has its place. I know, yeah. Carl's got, you know, his opinions on the security for it, and I think you're right about that. But, you know, for people who want computing power and don't have, and they're more concerned about their cash flow than they are about, you know, the ability to make capital expenditures, it's a place to go to get computing power that you need to run your business.
Well, my blog is on there.
Yes, but a lot of people just cede their security to the cloud provider, and you can't do that.
Oh, no, no. I mean, my blog's on there, but the point of a blog is to publish information. So, there you go.
You guys are so.
You just, all you're going to do is get the information.
You guys are.
Yeah, you're going to steal what I already intended you to have.
You guys are so fun to have on, because you immediately go with the part that it actually makes sense and people should be thinking. What I'm talking about, I need a commercial that says PTI, the first firm to use cloud or to use AI to manage your portfolio. It'd probably be a great marketing gig, even though I don't even have it. Nobody knows what it is. It has nothing to do with what it is. Right?
Yeah. It's just, I mean, anytime anybody gives me that AI shtick, my instant pushback is that there is never once, and I challenge anyone who says otherwise, there's never once been a machine that has demonstrated a single instance of out-of-scope thought. And yet you do it every single day without even thinking about it. Hell, my cat does it. So as soon as you show me that, then you have something that is better than my cat.
I'm not so sure my terrier dog ever did. He was pretty focused. It was always straight line with him.
Focus is a good word.
He was like very it. Focused, Scruff.
Well, yeah. A raven can do it. So there you go.
I think a poodle can do it. I don't know if a terrier can. They're just
well, terriers are terriers are a little unique.
they're focused, but they're always looking. They're always on duty. It's like, we've got the big sell off yesterday. We've coming back a little bit today, but boy, not much. I mean, this is a good rally this morning. We're up 24 in the S&Ps, and we're up 100 in the NASDAQ, but we were down 500 in the NASDAQ yesterday, so it doesn't seem right. Like much, even though it sort of ought to be. Are we... This SMCI is causing a little bit of an issue, and Carl thinks it's a little bit more than that. Kevin questions the auditor was only there a year, which we didn't know yesterday, Carl. It's oil is up $1.30 today. We don't see the news. Britain has had some issues with their they're inflating again over there, and they're putting money in the system, and they're going to have to tax again, evidently, some more. I think we're kind of there. Are they the canary in the coal mine on that? I mean, I don't see either when everybody stops talking Tuesday night, I hope, or Wednesday morning. Neither one
just
of
make
these
the commercials go away.
Yeah. Well, it's one thing nice about being in Illinois. There's no commercials, really, because there's no
contest.
Yeah, there's no
right.
contest. But I'll tell you what.
Well, and there really isn't in Indiana, but because I'm in a media area that also, because I live in Michigan, in a media area that spills into Michigan, we get them.
The insane part of this is that I'm on T-Mobile for my cellular service, and the amount of spam text messages over the last month and a half, none of which I see. So they're wasting, the tenth of a penny. But this is, the problem we've had with spam in the in the computer and email world has been ridiculous over a huge amount of time. In fact, one of the pieces of software I wrote and sold to people after I got rid of my company was essentially to do that, to front end your email system and interdict spam before there were common stuff out there for everybody else to use. Now you got Spam Assassin and a bunch of others, and it's surprisingly easy to actually trap 99% of it. But that's because the people who are sending it are stupid. They don't actually spend any money on it. If it cost them anything, it wouldn't be economic, because you get a 1/100th of a percent response rate, right? So the only reason it works is because it's so cheap to do. That's the only reason anyone does it. And cell phones, because they are receiver pays in some way, Congress actually passed a law that said it's illegal to spam text messages, that you have to opt into those. It's illegal to do this. And guess who isn't covered by the law?
Oh, the pals.
Oh, Congress.
Of course, politicians. Political ads are not,
How do they get your number?
Well, you want to know how I think they get it? I think they get it from these data leaks that have phone numbers in them. This stuff gets traded around and gets associated with you. And once it does, I mean, like if you manage to steal my, you don't even need the password. If you steal the contents of the Amazon customer list minus passwords, or if the passwords are encrypted so you can't break them anyway, my phone number's in there. And once you have that, and for example, that I have a Google Pixel and what it is, and you have a device identifier, now you've got the ability to spam me incessantly with text messages.
But I'm only
You know, I think it's probably easier than that, Carl, because all you really need to do is choose a block of numbers and just blast out.
Start blasting them and hope to God you get somebody.
If half of them don't exist, so what?
That's the thing, though, about it being so cheap, Kevin, is that that's where the problem is that when something has no cost, then this kind of thing happens. And that's why, you know, my opinion is you ought to be able to backcharge. I mean, if you could just backcharge anybody that sent you one of these things a penny, it would stop it.
How do I only get stuff from the Democrats?
Well, because they have somehow linked you to the fact that you've got a Democrat voter registration.
Well, I mean, in Chicago, everybody has to. Or else, who do you get to vote for in a primary?
Well, I get that. Well, guess what? I have a GOP voter registration because otherwise I wouldn't be able to vote in the primary here.
Well, we have open primaries.
Guess how many Democrats have spammed me?
Well, here, I haven't gotten anything from the Republicans.
Well, guess how many
None.
I've gotten from the Democrats?
None.
Right.
That's kind of odd. You know, you would think that whole idea is to get somebody. I've been in a presidential election. I actually went through the last. I think I'm 2-2-2 in the last six.
Republicans,
Democrats, and libertarians. Is Hal Wright this libertarian so bad you can't even vote for him?
Oh yeah, he's. Oh my God. I looked into this guy because, you know, any port in a storm, right? I mean, when you really don't like either of the other guys. You got to be joking. I mean, Gary Johnson was back when I was an officer, and it was horrible. I made a big stink within the Florida EC about it because he made a bunch of claims about getting the debt and the budget in New Mexico under control when he was governor, and they were flat out lies. I mean, this was not, you know, political machinery. He was completely full of BS, and anybody that took a look at the actual data, which of course is all public.
Well, it isn't.
Well, no, well, I mean, the state debt per capita and things like that's all public information.
But I mean, this is a long time ago. The lady who ran for governor in New Jersey, Kevin, you know who this is, and she essentially wiped out the deficit instantly by moving from an accrual-based system to cash, like in Illinois. Well, you didn't do anything. You just didn't pay people.
Oh, right. No, I mean, we had some experience with that at MCS because we had some accounts in Chicago, and they tried to decide that they would pay us when they felt like it, and they found out that, and I can pull the line cards and tag out your connection when I feel like it, too.
Well, you can do that. Most people can't. What's, Kevin, while you're here... We can talk 13 minutes, and Carl can opine. What's new on the sports gig? We talked a little bit about it with Mike the other day. With the Irish aren't playing. Is there any big games this year? We got the 12 people going in the playoffs.
Ohio State and Penn State is your biggie this week.
Where is it?
I believe it's in Pennsylvania.
Have you ever been to that stadium? I have not. Is it nice?
Yeah, no.
It's been kind of an add-on where
it's a typical old college stadium that they keep adding space to it. So you know, they just keep bolting on different parts. So, you know, it's a good game day venue. It's a good place to go see a game, but the stadium itself is nothing special. I just look at it that way. And that's going to most college places. You go to Nebraska, in the NFL, everybody builds a new stadium every once in a while. In college, almost nobody builds a new stadium. Instead, they just bolt on an upper deck and say, okay, now let's go to the end zone and put an upper deck. And you know, it looks that way. So that's what's unique is in the Chicago area, you got Northwestern that's actually tearing down old Dyke Stadium and putting up a new place. It's going to be a lot smaller, but I'll bet you it's a whole lot nicer.
Tulane did the same thing, right? Believe it or not, Carl, I actually went to a game. The 73 Irish-Alabama game was in the old Sugar Bowl. God bless. I can only imagine. Rats are running around that place, but it was an ancient an ancient thing.
New Year's Eve game. Yeah. I tried to get Bear Bryant's hat.
Couldn't get anywhere.
There were some very large Alabama State troopers guarding him.
Oh God, yeah. That was a. But the lights weren't that good, as I recall, Kevin. But that place, I was wondering if it was with that many people and it was going to stand up. Well, they ended up just tearing that down, right? And they played at the Superdome for forever. And then 2-3 years ago, they built another stadium on their campus. But I think it's only, am I right, 35,000 people, something like that? It's like Northwestern.
It could be, yeah. And it's and I think that's smart. You know, there's a few places, a few stadiums where they can consistently get 80,000 or 100,000 or whatever it is they get. But it, you know, that's not most colleges. And so to operate a stadium, you know, based on what it was like in the good old days, just doesn't make any sense.
Well, what is the, maybe Carl can opine on Tennessee. I mean, we're brainwashed by the Notre Dame experience, where when there's a game, it's the only time you locked your room because there was nobody on campus. If there was somebody on campus, he was there to do some dastardly deed. Robin said Michigan was the same way. They even stopped demonstrating during the Vietnam War to go to the game. Even the demonstrators went to the game. I don't think that's a phenomenon at a lot of places. I mean, Wisconsin, I think.
Oh my God! But I mean, I'll tell you what. If there is a college program where the athletic director has actually made the outrageous amount of money they make, and he actually earned it by doing things that grossly increase the value of cash that flows around as a not in grift and scams, but actually by people going to games and spending money. Okay, it would be UT.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, Tennessee fills that joint. I've been there too.
Neyland is insane. It's so insane that in the main tailgating deck, main tailgating parking lot, they now are charging $300 to park there on game day.
Well, that's the hardest thing to get for a Notre Dame game is the parking pass, not the ticket.
Yeah, well, I mean, but the tickets are insanely expensive. And the thing is, the face value isn't, but the demand is so high that the only way you can get them, unless you're an alumni and you or somehow otherwise connected and can get into the queue, which, by the way, has a huge waiting list.
And just put the donation to get into the queue into the cost of the tickets. So they're insanely expensive too.
Oh, exactly. But I mean, but even so, like if I want to go to a home game, there's no way I'm doing that for a couple of people for under $1,000.
But I mean, there are schools, and I'm asking Kevin, as he and Bob used to go see one every year, but I don't think Northwestern gets 30% of the students at a game.
No, whereas Wisconsin does. You mentioned Wisconsin; they do. I mean, they Wisconsin's a really fun place to see a game.
Ohio State, they pack them in, and out of 100,000 people,
they pack them in. Tennessee, they pack them in. Tennessee was one of the best trips we ever took.
Tennessee's
Knoxville on a game weekend was a blast, and the fans were great.
Oh yeah, and the other thing,
they were great to the visiting fans too.
Yeah. And one of the things that they've done, and they don't do it on every game, but you do see it sometimes. If you've ever seen the orange and white checkerboard pattern in the stands, the way they do that is they print on the back of the ticket which color you should wear.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, except it's probably all electronic now, so it's built into your electronic ticket.
Yeah, but still.
In fact, if you really want to do it right, just make when they scan in, you turn them away if they're not wearing the right color.
Well, but there's a big difference in Ohio State needing 100,000 seat stadium if 45,000 students are going to show up. It's a big difference than if 10 show up. I mean, Northwestern is just, we want paying customers and students aren't paying or something. It was out about Ohio State is the one of my further relatives marries a guy. They were in the, you'd love this, Carl. They were in the business of canals. Evidently, there's lights and canals in Florida and places, but you know more about that. But they sold that business. They had his money. They said, well, we like doing business with each other. They're our partners. Let's find something else to get in. They bought a business that did buried fiber cables. And when the dot bomb stuff was landing, anybody who was close to it. They ended up getting like a dot bomb price for this place. Well, all they were doing was digging cables, you know, fiber optic. And right. So they ended up, the guy's mother gave $35 million to Ohio State when you could build a building for that, right? So they've got the number one skybox, and he also, their other business was in RVs. They also have the number one RV spot, and an RV they only use for the football games. This thing is absolutely incredible. The side of it has like a 70-inch TV. They just pull up this thing, and the side you can watch. So if you don't want to go to the game, you can just sit there where all the cookers and everything are built right into the RV. It's unbelievable. So we go to the game, but there's a gazillion people there, right? And there only in Ohio could you pull this off. The rule is you can't have an open bottle or an open drink, a bottle of booze.
Right.
But you can drink all you want. You just can't show it. So there's got to be a million of these 16-ounce or whatever they are, 24-ounce red cups. And you open up the beer and then in your trunk, pour it in there. And if you went by, you'd swear these people were all teetotalers. And they're serious. But if you're sitting there with a bottle of Pabst Blue Ribbon, they're going to come by and say, hey, put that away. I mean, Ohio people don't kid around with this stuff. So there's 85,000 people there getting schnockered, and you can't see one bottle of vodka or one beer.
Oh, Chief, you know, in the 1980s, I did some contract work in New York, and you can't drink on the street, right? I mean, that's in most towns. Okay, so you go into one of these little bodega kinds of things that are around Times Square, and you buy a Foster's. The guy puts it in a can and gives you puts a can in a paper bag, gives you a straw.
Oh God! Well, when we were Kevin mentioned the 73 game, he was down there. I was wandering around with our buddy Bill Hake. Remember him, Kevin? And it was a long line to get in Pat O'Brien's. So Billy says, well, we can't just wait in that line without something to drink, right? So we go into this liquor store, and we buy a pint of some booze, right? And the guy goes, okay, here you go. And he gives us 2 8-ounce cups. And we go, what are those for? Well, you can't take the bottle out of here. You mean we got to pour ourselves an 8-ounce drink? You got to give us a couple ice cubes, and there you go. And off we went. But you couldn't drink. I guess you couldn't throw a bottle at anybody, but obviously you could drink. I mean, it's like, all right, guys, we only got a couple of minutes. Kyle, you'll be back on for the labor report. But, Kevin, what do you make of, you're not usually given market predictions, but yesterday was one of those days where everything was down. And the rumor was, well, not the rumor, from Greg Pappas, our producer on Thursday, that the clearing firm they use, Wedbush, that across the board raised everybody's margin requirements next week. Now, I don't think they did it on retail. We haven't heard about that, but on a professional side.
Yeah, I haven't gotten anything from, you know, any of the places I do business with.
But people are at least worried about that, because we did talk yesterday, what's margin interest up to, Carl? $830 billion or something? It's like a record.
If they moved not so much initial margin, but they moved maintenance margin numbers. Oh my God.
Oh, you'd have to have people writing checks or selling, or either the money supply drop or
exactly.
Yeah, but the it's kind of sort of happening. But even soybeans and corn were down yesterday, Kevin. Everything was down. You know, gold got merged, so did silver. Oil bouncing back today, but it was up back over 70. But there's a lot of little pitfalls hanging around here. I was just
But that's what happens when you get things so inflated. The bubble always looks for a pin.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess the who's your
there is the name of today's show. Yeah, the bubble always looks for a pin.
Hey, Kevin, I don't know if you had a chance with everybody switching days. I've been losing track of what I said with what. What'd you think of the Illinois rule about the betting on the sports? Was I talking about you, Carl, with that? Were the you can't have
You and I talked on the phone about it, but I don't know if you brought it up with Carl.
They have a new rule regarding betting that said you can't take bets on anything that can be directed by an individual person.
Oh yeah, you said that. Yeah, you brought it. Well, I mean, that's kind of like one of those Captain Obvious deals, right?
Well, I mean, it's not. I mean, there's Super Bowl bets on how long the national anthem is going to take, and clearly the singer can tell you how long it's going to take.
Well, I'm just saying, it's a Captain Obvious thing that ought to be there, right?
Yeah.
So the bets we're talking about are you can't bet on whether the first play of the game is going to be a pass or a run because the coach can influence that. You can't
or the quarterback can audible.
Yeah, or you can the kicker. You can't bet on a kicker making or losing a kick, making or missing a kick. There's a bunch of stuff, but it's basically anything that they decide that one person can. And you can't bet on injuries either. Did people used to bet on injuries? Maybe they did. I don't know. I don't want to. Yeah, I don't want to ask you, Kevin. What'd you make of this Michigan and North Carolina guys retiring the quarterbacks? You hear that?
No, I didn't hear it.
Well, the Michigan quarterback got his. This is a guy who's been at two other schools. He's in his seventh year. I don't know how the hell he pulled that off, but he got his fifth concussion. He says, "I'm out because I'm not gonna play anymore." And I think the guy in North Carolina did the same thing.
Smart to do it, but might have been a little smarter to do it three concussions ago.
Yeah, I mean, what is the status of that new helmet? I saw like one person wearing it. Is it? What is the deal with that?
Well, there are whole teams wearing it, so there is all kinds of new gear. It can reduce the incidence of, and it's not just the Visus helmets now. There's other ones as well, but everybody's wearing some version of that now, or at least has the option to.
I'm talking about the ones with the big pads on the outside.
Oh, those the ones they use in practice. I don't think those do that much.
Okay.
You know, just a foam padding or any kind of padding is not it isn't going to do that much. It's the new helmet designs are the ones where the shell isn't hard anymore, and then the whole inner part of the helmet is built to collapse in and absorb shock. So you would actually, in slow-mo, you would actually see the helmet kind of giving some, and it attempts to absorb the shock inside the helmet rather than letting the brain absorb all of the shock. And I think they've had some positive effect with that, but the way the game is played, you're not going to make it go away. It is a dangerous game.
Well, when we were, I don't know if you ever played, Kevin played a lot more than I did, but the helmets in our day were one of two kinds. Either, well, they were totally hard shell, right, Kevin?
With a suspension helmet. Yeah.
And either inside there was like a rope suspension where your head went into the rope harness and you had, you know, padding around the ears in place, or some of the better helmets had like padding all through the thing and there wasn't really a suspension. But the idea was to stop you from getting like cut or something, or those.
Yeah, when I was in high school, the air helmets came out, where you could pump air into them, and they weren't especially effective, but they started down the road of looking at different technologies for it.
But the shell was totally non-giving. I mean, it was designed
correct.
So nothing was going to hit your head. But they forgot about the other stuff. But some of the other equipment, I don't know. I mean, I think people. When Roger Goodell spoke at the Economic Club of Chicago dinner a while ago, where they did something for Virginia McCaskey, thinking she was going to die. She's still with us. That'd be 10 years ago. Good for her. Saying it's sometimes an NBA player, his stuff weighs more, the pads he wears more than an NFL player now.
Well, think about this, though. I mean, you know, you also have people who play rugby.
Yeah.
Okay. It is. One of the things that I always find interesting is that there's certainly a lot, you know, there's a lot of science that goes into this, okay? But you have to be careful because there's also a human element in that if you make somebody believe they're impervious, they will do things they would otherwise not do.
Well, in football, it's...
And the translation to rugby for that is that, you know, people aren't going to lead with the head because it hurts them more than it hurts anybody else.
Well, that's exactly right, and you don't see it in rugby. You don't see that kind of thing, and rugby is an extraordinarily physical game.
But it's shoulders,
so there have always been people who said the face mask for football was the worst invention because now people lead with the face, you know, face mask on theirs. So. Yeah, I think that's an interesting aspect of it. I also think it's interesting that you know, I kind of think something they ought to do is at least try, experiment with it, is to see if widening the field might make a difference, because it would put more premium on speed rather than bulk.
Well, the collisions that you worry about, you mentioned rugby, but we've got to go to Dan here in a second, but the collisions you're worried about, in rugby, you you rarely give up the same amount of speed before there's a collision. I mean, everybody's right next to each other the whole game.
Right, right.
I mean, that's why they're trying to do all this stuff on kickoffs. I mean, you never had a rugby play where somebody ran 40 yards as fast as he could and slammed into somebody.
Well, that's the thing. It's a delta, you know, it's acceleration is what causes the problem, obviously, right?
I mean, if you're in a scrum, you're gonna get scratched and you're gonna get bruised, but you're not gonna get clobbered, right? I mean, because you can't move, you're right up against them.
But Tom, the fun is all in the clobbering.
I guess. All right, Carl, we'll have you back in a half hour. We're gonna talk to Dan for a bit. We got a labor report. Kevin, thank you very much. Have a nice weekend, bud. I'll talk to you. SP
all right.
We're gonna have a minuscule break here. SP Futures up 23. NASDAQ Futures up 93. Again, a nice morning, but nothing like yesterday down. We'll see if we keep going. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now.
Hello, now. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Ricky on the board. S&P futures are up 22, NASDAQ futures up 91. Do we have Mr. Dan?
Yes.
Dan, how are you? Good to hear from you. So much stuff going on. I got to talk to you, bud. Got to talk to you.
Okay, great.
So we have Chevron is going to return. You can explain something to me. You're not as cynical as I am yet. When Chevron says they're going to return $7.7 billion to shareholders, $4.7 billion are share buybacks. How is a share buyback returning something to shareholders? You're buying stock from a guy that doesn't want it anymore. What is the definition there? What am I missing here?
Well, not everyone. Some people don't want it anymore. It really depends on the companies. I'm not up on Chevron. I mean, it's not a company that's even on our radar screen for purchase on the bond side or the equity side. But it really depends on what's going on with the company's balance sheet at the time. If they're looking to improve their financial leverage, say, for example, that could be one possibility for buying back stock, because it gives you a larger percentage of equity relative to your total debt. And then in that case, it would make sense. That may improve a company's credit score. It may a credit rating. There's a number of different reasons why a company would purchase back the stock. Giving more money back to shareholders in whatever form it happens to be, whether it be through dividends or it could be and that's more I think sometimes just a marketing ploy to try to get more interest in the stock. So it could be for a couple of reasons. I'm honestly not up on what Chevron is doing right now. Like I said, I don't know enough about they're not on our radar screen of companies we would invest in at the time. So
I'm not big on share buybacks. That's why I want to change the tax law to you only pay once and pay the shareholders. Just pay them a dividend, for God's sake.
That's what I would say. The preferable thing to do would be to pay the dividend.
What's going on in the UK in the last few days? Is that something you got your eyeballs on for here? They're going to hype capital gains tax, national insurance contributions, and carried interest, blah blah blah, because they're having deficit issues. And
yeah, they're having. It's actually, they're somewhat similar to what's going on here, and it's they're you know, even politically, they've had some, you know, some similarities over the last few years to what to what's happening here. And my belief still to this day, although I don't think everybody agrees with me, but my belief is that Europe tends to follow the U.S., or they really look to the U.S. as our, as their lead. So the, you know, even like when the ECB cut rates, you know, they were doing it in anticipation of the U.S. cutting rates, right? So that that was a you know, and I think they cut too soon. They were the first ones to cut before the European Central Bank cut before the U.S. And then actually the Bank of England cut as well. So so I think in general, the, you know, there tends to be a you know, they're following our lead, if you will. And that's always been the case, whether it be the U.K., France, Germany especially. And in the case of taxes, their situation is very different than ours when it comes to taxes, because they're, you know, a lot of the, I think it's true of, again, of Europe as a whole. I think the UK is someplace between Europe, the rest of Europe and us in terms of tax situation. They don't have as much pushback on higher taxes as we would here in the United States, but they probably have less pushback than, say, some of the other European countries in terms of being more, you know, providing benefits like health care and all of that. What I'm seeing is it's sort of the same thing happening here as well, and we're going to see after the election how that pursues. I think the there's already been higher taxes. You know, one area here that we're facing concern is property taxes, and you don't see it, but if you're in, you know, the states, I don't know about Illinois, but I certainly know I'm in Boston right now and talking to people here in Massachusetts, talking to people and clients in California, New York. You know, you're seeing like large increases in property taxes to cover certain expenses of the government, and that's it's actually gotten to a point where for some people it's the taxes are prohibitively high. UK, I think, is dealing with something similar, and you know, sort of has the same you know, again, looking at the US, mimicking the US, maybe even having you know, a tougher hand when it comes to using taxes as a way to subsidize government spending.
I'm not sure on the, plus we had other stuff to talk about today, but in Chicago here, it's brutal. I mean, there's people in some areas that are, their stuff's doubled in the last 10 years. I mean, it's
yeah.
You know, up 40-50%. You know,
when they're talking about, I was kind of thinking that when they're talking about, you know, trying to make housing more affordable, understandably so for people who are you know, working as support staff, working at the grocery stores and the, you know, the restaurants, the, you know, the people who are in those situations. And I will say I've seen in Florida that the affordable housing is really just providing, you know, a housing that may not be quite as up, you know, up to the same standard as a lot of the new homes for, say, middle class people or people in higher income brackets. But when it comes to looking at overall housing costs, property taxes absolutely have to be included. Insurance has to be included. And HOAs fees have to be included. And I'm hoping that if either candidate is going to be looking at improving housing costs, that they're going to be looking at those issues as well.
I think that from what they've been, of course, it's hard to separate the politics and what you tell people to get a vote from what people actually think. But listening to these two people, I don't think either one of them owns a calculator.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't really think they're getting down to the specifics. They're talking, I think, whatever their base is interested in hearing, and probably less about actually trying to accomplish something that's going to be really good for the average person, if you will, or the majority of people, not just the average person, but the majority of people out there.
And for whatever reason, I don't think this is all that controversial. You never, who was it that said, you never bet or something along those lines on the stupidity of the American public. I mean, you can go out and tell people that they're not, you're going to get rid of the income tax and you're going to pay tariffs, and you can count on 99.9% of those idiots, not idiots individually, but as collectively, to not look here what I'm looking at, that your income tax revenue is $2.3 trillion, your tariff revenue is $69 billion. Duh.
Yeah, it's, well, the thing is for us, and sometimes I have to reel back in my thoughts and when I'm ready to say this, but one of the things that's kind of obvious, and we've talked about this, Chief, for months now, is just that the individual investor who has retired recently and decided that, hey, you know, this will be part of my day in retirement. I'll be trading on my own account. Oh, and by the way, I can do this really well. And that's only because the entire market has gone up. Whether you're in stocks or bonds, you've seen the market go in one direction for the last several years. And this past year in particular, it's been really hard to not make money in the market. So that's sort of cockiness, if you will, is coming from people who really do not understand the economy, and it doesn't mean that they're not brilliant people in other areas or have other areas of expertise, but this isn't their specialty. And I'm finding that I don't know if I want to use the word cockiness, is kind of what's driving up the market, along with the fear of missing out. Well, and the people who are looking at their overall picture, I'm often surprised when I talk to friends, clients, family members who are incredibly bright, but they don't necessarily understand how it all fits together and how it's going to impact them personally. And then I try to help them or give them like some big picture views or kind of understand the relationships, because also oftentimes people read one article and that is an article that's written on opinion with maybe some facts in it, and they're making a decision, whether it be a major investment decision for their retirement accounts or just a financial decision for their basic household budget.
I mean, you and I are unique in this. We're not unique, there's a lot of us in the business, but in that we actually are doing stuff for people. It's one thing to say I could make that free throw. It's quite another to make it, right?
Right.
And even a day like yesterday, which I don't care who you are, and I've been in this business a long time, you look at a day like yesterday and you go, okay, maybe it's a tad overdone. Maybe it's not. I mean, we probably will bounce back from this. We usually do, but we might not. Probably is a really bad word. I mean, I remember 1987, I said, probably we're not going to go much further down in here. How'd that work out for me? I mean,
it happened pretty quickly, too.
Yeah, well,
it does happen quickly on the downside. If it can be a long period of building up, you know, and then on the downside, it's going to be mass selling. And I think if there is selling, if we do reach that point, it will be precipitous. There will be like this, the some sort of word that gets out there that either, you know, something like tech, whether it be AI or another area of technology, is not, you know, is problematic, or cybersecurity becomes a bigger issue, or there's something that hits, and then it's going to be a snowball effect down. Whereas if the institutional market was holding the majority of stocks out there, or really was the ones that were leading it at this point, it probably would go down at a slower pace, and the market would probably look very differently than it does today. Because, as you know, this is what I did for the first, you know, 25 years of my career. I was managing money for large institutions, retirement plans for unions, corporations, and then foundations and endowments. And they have, the boards of those organizations do not have necessarily as much of an emotional attachment, even though some of the board members may be employees of the organization or alumni, if you will, of the organization. But when you're setting up a plan for an institution, you have diversification requirements. And generally, it's going to take longer to change those over time. But they're sticking to a mandate, if you will, that has a certain percentage in equities, a certain percentage in fixed income, alternative investments. And
I'll bet that, Dan, over the year, that has crept precipitously towards stocks.
Yes, and it has. And that's, I think, I think is the fear of missing out. I do think if there's a correction here, we're going to see things go down pretty quickly. There will be. I think yesterday's correction is just as you were saying, Chief. The market got ahead of itself. I still think tech is overvalued. We're looking at it and following it, but we really don't want to make a big investment there. We may want to take advantage of some short-term moves like yesterday, and like buying the market when it fell yesterday, and today it most likely will end maybe a little bit up or flat, but I doubt we're going to have the same kind of day unless some negative news comes out in the next little bit here with
the harsh message that I'm trying to give the listeners, and maybe it's a little too harsh, but look at a day like yesterday, and most people are long. In fact, just about everybody's long, and my clients we're long just about everywhere too, but we have some protection. So yesterday was not a good day, but we probably the market was down 2%, we might have lost 0.5%, you know, that type of thing. But it, when the guys come on TV and they look good and they, you know, they dress better than I do, and they start talking about don't worry about it, they're not working for you. They're working for them. I mean, that conversation with Dan or I, we're going to look at your account and say, okay, you've got some diversification. Of course, if the whole market goes down, it doesn't matter. You just lose everywhere. But generally, some diversification is good. If you're overweighted in some of the, I mean, Carl's been on it pretty heavy, but everybody with this SMCI thing and the size of they are of a customer in NVIDIA, not saying sell NVIDIA, not saying anything like that, but your eyebrow has to go up a little bit, doesn't it, Dan? I mean, just where is this AI stuff going? Amazon last night saved the day a little bit by saying they think for sure that their huge investment in AI is going to return to shareholders, and they basically reassured everybody on that note a little bit yesterday. Now, is the guy talking out of his nose? Who the hell knows? But because these guys are more like spokesmen than they are CEOs these days. I mean, it's the job. But the fact is, you don't want to hear that it's not going to come back. And I don't want to tell you that either, neither does Dan, but we will be able to see your account in front of us. We know your age. We know your situation. Our advice might be, you know, you really can't handle three more days like yesterday. We need to do a little something, whether it's just protect a little bit or protect half. I mean, I have a stock here with a recent client, and I won't even say the name of the stock or anything. The stock has been down $16 in the last 4 days. You know, that it's a single stock issue for somebody who's retired.
Right.
We have puts for that because they can't lose that dough. Right, Dan?
This has really been the year of buying the index. You know, this has been the year where nothing can, you know, you can't go wrong by buying the index. So what we buy, when we're taking equity exposure, when we've been taking it this year, unlike past years, is VTI, and we mentioned this last week, the Vanguard Total Stock Index, and you can move in and out of that. It's extremely liquid. If you, you know, on days that the market is down, if you have a strong feeling that the market's going to rally the next day, then you can buy that. And the thing I like about VTI is it tends to have a lower beta than, say, the QQQ, which is the NASDAQ, predominantly tech names and more aggressive names. And when we say lower beta, we mean that it tends to trade, if the market is down 1%, it might be down less than 1%. But if you have technology, if you're buying the NASDAQ and the market's down 1%, it might go down 2%. So, but it might also go up 2%.
Right.
And if the market's only up 1%. So it's just to let people know that when you hear the terminology beta, beta is really a measure of it's a volatility measure, but it's also a measure of how much your particular investments look relative to the market. And if the market is up 1%, are you going to be up 1%? Or if you're going to only be up 0.5%. So we look at that when we're constructing portfolios. We look at, you know, the risk tolerance of individuals when we're making those decisions.
Dan, that number, the beta, obviously, it was originally defined for individual stock, right?
Yes.
So if a market was up 1%, the beta of IBM would be what, 80? So you could count on it being up, count on it. You would predict it to be up 0.8%, right? I mean, something along those lines.
Right.
And then there'd be stocks that were more volatile. Do you think it works for the different indices? When you say the market, I mean, hell, there's a lot of days where the Russell's on it's getting his ass kicked and the Q's are to the moon.
I mean, so the way it's being done now, because with ETFs, there are more people buying it. Certainly with the mutual fund, you can look at how the fund is done relative to the index.
Right.
And so you will have a measure of beta. You will have a measure of how the fund does relative to the market. And then with ETFs, the same thing. You can still measure how that, because an ETF, if you will, is in effect is a stock. So when you are, you can have a measure, you know, relevant to a particular index. Now the problem with that is that if you're looking at, you know, if the beta is relative to the S&P 500 and you're looking at a NASDAQ ETF, it may not be relevant. It may not apply. So you have to make sure when you're looking at a particular index that it is an index that is your, first of all, it's the index that you is your benchmark, the one that you're trying to beat. And then it's also relevant to what you're investing in. So if you're investing in tech stocks and you compare yourself to the Dow Jones, it's not going to necessarily be relevant. You would probably want to look at the you want to look at the NASDAQ if you're investing predominantly in tech stocks.
Yeah, Dan, when we first started protected index program, it was 1997. And I think the only ETF out there was the SPY, the Spider, right, which made it incredibly easy to manage.
Yeah, right? And that, and for years and years, Chief, I mean, going back to the mid-80s when I got in the business with institutional investing, the equity index was the S&P 500. That was the only measure, really. You didn't try to slice and dice it. And now you do slice and dice it, and some of the ETFs. And I would actually caution people when they're buying ETFs that have a very specific focus, because those are the ones, if we do have any downturn in the market, that are going to get hit harder. They're not as liquid. And they're also, I think it's tougher to outperform their particular benchmark than it is with, say, an S&P 500. So that's probably the safest measure for stocks, a benchmark for stocks still today.
I would say so,
Yeah.
Well, and when we crashed in 2000, we had a lot of people involved. They had just started doing the Qs. And some people's clients wanted their stuff in the Qs more than the S&P. And it was, I think the Qs went, my memory's getting a tad foggy, but I think the Qs went from 120 to 20.
Oh yeah, they
Something along those lines. And so it was down. What were the Qs down? They were down like 70%. So, I mean, and I think the S&P was only down what, 20, 15, something like that.
Yeah, the S&P is less volatile than the
People that we had in the Qs.
The Dow would be less volatile than the S&P.
Well, the people in the Qs were, so we say, they were genuflecting to the altar of puts that we had protected from.
We didn't lose.
You're not going to make when something goes down, but we maybe lost 10, something like that. It wasn't very much. But we didn't have that many people in the Qs back then either. It was just kind of getting going. But that's the danger that you have, because the five or six stocks that were, I think they touched 50% of the Qs. We have five or six stocks doing the same thing now. So
that may be the risk, that we're looking at when we're looking at what may happen. We may be looking at just a certain small number of stocks representing such a large portion of the index. And also going back to years ago, the way the index was set up, it was weighted average. So if you have a larger company, it would represent a larger portion of that index.
Right.
But then also there were equal weighted indices, so that you could be comparing yourself to the S&P, but now all of the stocks in the S&P, all 500 stocks, would be equally weighted. So that's a different way of measuring performance relative to an equal weighted as opposed to a market weighted.
Yeah, but you got to be careful with that, because I love the place, I don't think you really want PTI in the same planet as Apple, do you?
Yeah, no, absolutely, and that's the concern. But now, actually, I think we have a different issue, and that issue is that the top seven stocks in the S&P and also in the NASDAQ are representing a very large portion because of the market weight of those companies increasing so rapidly, and that could be one of the things that ends up driving the market down. If we start seeing a sell-off in any of those names or all those names. The other thing that people need to be aware of, which we know because we've been in the markets for so long, is the contagion effect. So if one stock is trading down because it's in a particular industry, say Nvidia has some bad news, well then that could directly impact some of these other companies. But even if it doesn't directly impact the companies, Nvidia may not impact Amazon very directly. I mean, there will be definitely some effect, but if you're looking at some of these companies, they're all going to trade down in unison. So if there's bad news, the bad news is going to get spread across the market.
Well, that's,
and then the one thing
that's difficult, Dan, elaborate on what you just said, because and we're going to go sneak the break here early. We're going to bring Caroline, talk a little bit more the Bodie is on the labor numbers, then we'll boot Carl off and we'll finish up with you. But here's my, what I think a lot of investment people, especially when you get this margin debt up to where it is now, it's what, $800 billion, some huge number.
Oh, yeah.
If you have two stocks in your portfolio, and you know we don't have anybody like this. Say you've got half NVIDIA and half Amazon, and you've got a lot of it on margin. And NVIDIA drops for whatever reason, or Amazon drops. And all of a sudden, you get this big margin call, and something, you know, we never really get margin calls. Here, nobody's at that kind of margin. But if we did, somebody'd call you and say, hey, Dan, what do you want us to do? Sell some stock, or are you going to send us like $300,000?
Right.
And Dan goes, well, I don't have a $300,000 in check account. You better sell some. Chances are, we're probably going to have to sell the Amazon, not the NVIDIA, right, because it's worth more.
Right.
Right? So it's when you have margin selling, it's not... You're not just selling. You hear this on TV once in a while when it happens. They'll go, well, everybody's selling it because of margin selling. No. If NVIDIA is trading $2, which I don't ever think is going to happen, what good does it do you to sell NVIDIA, right?
Exactly. And that's generally what happens. And there are, you know, there have been situations, as you mentioned, like yesterday, where there have been issues with margin calls. Also, the margin rates had increased quite a bit as rates were going higher. So there's a... Yeah, I think that's a technical part of the market that a lot of individual investors aren't aware of, and also not knowing how, when the market does go down, how it's going to happen. I mean, none of us really know exactly how it's going to happen, but generally it will be contagion.
All right, we're going to dash here, Dan. We're about 30 seconds away from the number. We're going to dash make
one. Ow.
We're not. Oh, we're already there. We got the number.
Ow, plus 12,000.
Uh-oh. Well, why don't we just not go to break? Why don't we just not?
That is a big ouch. I got to dig through the center of it. But the, all right, well, the
let's go to break for like a minute, Ricky, and then we'll come back with both guys and the number. Yeah, 12,000 is not a lot. Okay, we'll be right back.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now, 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-388-4901.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjocks@live.com. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. We had the number that came out here. The non-farm payrolls were 12, but S&Ps were up 23, NASDAQ futures up 90. We're still up. But let's get to kind of these numbers. Dan, if you haven't seen the two-step that Carl and I do every month when this happens, I look at a one thing here, the A1 report. Carl always tells me it's screwed up, which he'll do in a second. But according to this thing, this is the household survey now, we got 400,000 people essentially came out of the workforce and went right to the column where we don't know what they're doing. With the people out of work and looking for work, the unemployed, virtually unchanged. So I know those numbers are screwed up, Carl. What are you seeing in the rest of this stuff?
Well, okay, so the unadjusted... The employed numbers down 108,000. That's that's not a small. That's got the wrong sign in front of it for October. I mean, you expect to see a negative number in January. You certainly don't expect to see one in October. The not in labor force was up about 250 to plus 262.
Adjusted, it's like four something.
Yeah, this is again, and the 12. Now here's where the problem, and this is serious. And we talked about this last month. The 12-month run rate, which is my definition of this, and nobody on the mainstream media talks about this. But the 12-month run rate is the delta between the people with jobs less the non-institutional population. Okay, because obviously, if I add 2 million people to the workforce, to the non-institutional population, that's people that are 16 or older and not institutionalized or dead, then in order for me to keep even in the economy, I have to employ 2 million people, right? So over that same period of time. So my like big number, the individual big number in all of this data release every month is that 12-month run rate. Not and that takes the seasonal adjustment out of it because Christmas comes the same time every year. That has been negative now all the way back to last November, and it is now -1.385 million, and that is decelerating. I mean, a trend line, if you look at it, it's going from the wrong way. It's from the upper left to the lower right, which is not what you want to see. And again, December and January tend to be dislocation months because you get the seasonal stuff. But this is very bad from a standpoint.
Well, how does these numbers that are conflicting, and Dan, please pile in, the ADP number shows, you know, those guys do what, 40% of the payrolls in the country or 50%?
Yeah, there's another problem here too, which is that when I look at there's non-correlated data sets within these reports, okay? And one of the ones that I always look at is the educational attainment one, because you can go from less educated to more educated, but you can't go from more educated to less. The only way that you can come out of the higher bracket is to die, because you never lose a bachelor's degree. You never lose an associate's or a high school diploma. Once you get one, it's yours. So that's a one-way transfer function that should be happening. And the problem with this in this report is that this report and this uncorrelated data set does correlate with the headline, which is that in all of these categories, they lost employment rate this last month.
Well,
that is extremely unusual. That normally doesn't happen in an economy.
How does the timing work? I mean, again, Dan Pylon, if you have a question, last month we were 200,000, right, or thereabouts.
Right.
All right. So my stupid math, actually, we're 210,000. There's 21 probably working days in the month. So somebody is hiring 10,000 people a day up until a certain date, and there's a cutoff. And now this month we hired 500 people a day. How the bleep does that happen that fast?
Well, you got a sample. There's sample error in all of these because it is a statistical sample. Okay, so there's some of that. But you've also got the, you know, exactly where that sample week falls can matter quite a bit. And when there's inflection points in the economy, you tend to get these kinds of things. This is a troubling report because I've seen this deterioration in the 12-month run rate number, you know, for the last year, and I've been talking about it, and that there's, you know, it does not jive with the headline numbers that have been put up. Okay, you look at that 12-month run rate number, and that's not what you should see if the rest of the employment report is, you know, is not screwed up somewhere, whether it's intentional or it's, you know, it's mistake, whatever. I mean, the conspiracy guys can have fun with it if they want. I just look at the data and say this is what I see in the data.
I know this is adjusted, but what are you showing in the household? Dan, whenever we do this, Carl's always he looks at the unadjusted household and he looks at the...
That's why I said neg 108 is the unadjusted household.
Okay, but the adjusted is down like almost 400.
Well, again, this is why I don't use that number.
Okay,
because somebody's got a knob in there, and exactly how they twist it. It's the same thing with the birth, death, and the establishment ratio. It's a black box. Could the current administration dial that, you know, tell somebody to do it? Well, they could. I mean, you'd like to argue.
Well, they sure as hell didn't up it.
you'd hope they wouldn't do something like that,
yeah.
Right? But I mean, right in front of the election,
they wouldn't say more people are laid off or not working.
Well, Chief, you sure don't. Yeah, I mean, if you're the administration in power and you want to see your person get the nod, you sure don't tell people that, by the way, the economy sucks right now, right?
Right.
one of the things that that I've observed, I'm in Boston right now, and you tend to see a little bit different, you know, if you're kind of doing your observation of the area and doing your interview, you know, talking to your clients and your friends and family, you get a different perspective. But one major trend that seems to be accelerating is the remote workers being called back to work.
Yeah.
And that has left the labor situation in kind of a different predicament. We've heard this, we've heard talk of this, but we talked to the CEOs of a lot of companies. And they started talking a year and a half ago about people coming back, and then it was gradual. And Now it's at a point where it seems to be accelerating, and it's across industries, even those industries that still are looking for new help. So the people who, especially the younger people who have moved out of the cities to areas that are more affordable, that have been working remotely, what do they do now? I mean, they can't, they well, have a very long commute.
Yeah, Dan, right? there's a very serious problem with that set of movements, because it has presented serious affordability problems.
Yes.
In areas that have lower wage bases.
Absolutely. Okay?
It is, I mean, this area it got a combination of that and the Airbnb craze.
Yes.
And that callback is going to take the air out of that balloon, whether people like it or not. It's going to happen. And I warned people when it was going on in the first place. I said, this is unstable. And the problem with it is employers are going to look at the productivity metrics of their people. And if they do not find that this is working from an operational perspective, they will step on it. It will take a while, but they will do it. And, you know, here we are. Now, the other interesting thing in this, in the establishment data in B3, pretty far down the list, is that the hourly earnings, I don't see wages getting cut in the hourly earnings, but what I am seeing is average weekly earnings in a whole bunch of these categories are down. Not a lot, but they're down, and that says hours are getting slashed.
Dan, what are you we haven't
made... Carl, I would tend to agree with you on the especially on the productivity comment, that how many hours have these people who have been working remotely, have they really cut back in terms of true productivity? Are they working only 20 or 25 rather than 40, and that would trickle down, I think, and eventually have an impact on the numbers.
Well, eventually people are going to look at, I mean, you know, look, people say, well, you know, I'm more productive when I'm home. Well, you know what, maybe some people are, but I guarantee an awful lot of people are clocked in while they're walking their dog.
Absolutely. I see that here. That's why I'm saying, that's my observation. Well, Dan, all these young people out walking their kids,
Dan
their newborns, you know, and they're 25 or 30 years old. So that's absolutely happening. And I do think there has been an acceleration in that. The other part is the baby boomers, you know, the people at the other end of the spectrum who have now been called back, but they've bought that second home. That second home has become their primary residence. And in the case of here, a lot of people move to northern New England, New Hampshire and Maine and Vermont and or down on Cape Cod. And so now they're being called back as well. So they're saying, hey, this is my cue to retire.
Well, yeah. And you know what? That coming out, though, I mean, you know, supply and demand is, you know, the first law of economics, right?
Yes.
So when you see that happen, that tends to put upward pressure on the wage base, you know, because people leave. And, you know, on the other hand, this makes an assumption, which is that the people that you brought on whenever you hired them, that you actually got something useful and you needed them. And one of the things, if you learn nothing from Musk taking over X, it's that he fired 2/3 of the employees.
Yeah.
And the company didn't collapse. Okay, now how much fat is in the rest of corporate America? And oh, by the way, when margins start getting squeezed and things start getting tight, what makes you think they're not going to do that too?
Carl, that's a headline thing for people who like Musk. Okay,
I'm not arguing that's entirely true, Tom. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but I'm saying somebody could, you know, when we had a lot of employees at PTI and we were doing a lot of commodity work and stuff, we could have on any given day I could have gotten rid of half the people. Yet all of a
sudden,
until the day you
needed them. Right.
Until somebody forgot to call the client that was having margin problems, and all of a sudden we're out of business. I mean, or something like that, because, you know, we didn't find the right person, or somebody didn't talk to the client when they needed them. I mean, nobody knows. You might, but nobody knows what damage, in terms of the future development of X, he's caused.
But that's true, and there is an assumption that he hasn't essentially cut his own you-know-what off, right?
Yeah.
Which, in the longer term, and maybe he has, and you know, we'll see over time. I'll tell you, though, one thing, and I've been yelling about this for 20 years. Healthcare, the average monthly gain over the last year is 58,000. The average, the number this last month was plus 52. Now, the problem is that prior to the crazy, The average was close to 30. So we are putting nearly double the number of people in there. And those are not doctors and nurses. All right, well, those people are pure parasites from a standpoint of the actual delivery of care to people. They're billing related in some form or fashion. They're extractions.
What do you say we tee this one up on Tuesday? Because I have a couple of matter of fact, I'm going to a wake on Sunday, which won't be a very good one. A friend of mine from high school and college.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I found out about what do you call somebody? Always been a friend, but we never really hung out in the same group together. But every time there was a party, we spent a half hour talking to each other. It was always,
yeah.
And it was just, let's just say, somewhere between a really good acquaintance and friend, somewhere in that area. But he was had some heart issue, and he was a month before they started to do anything.
Yeah, like I said, the problem is, you know, I mean, you'd look at this and you'd think we'd be the healthiest people on the planet,
Somehow or another, the capability of the medical area keeps getting better and better, and the care keeps getting worse and worse. Nobody seems to have a doctor. Anyway, but let's focus on that on Tuesday. But Dan, I want to ask you another thing that you guys veered off on when you talk about the amount of hours being less, kind of wandered off into the area where people are working from home. Let's focus a second, just, you know, not real long, but I think the people I talk to are not people working from home. They're guys working like our buddy Andrew was on Wednesday. He works at one of these chicken places. Or even the Walmarts where if it's real slow on a Wednesday, they'll tell people to not come in on a Thursday. We're, you know, to a certain extent, we're three old farts where somebody says somebody's making $20 an hour. We go, okay, that's $800 a week. It's not what Carl tells me. It's not necessarily $800 a week now. It's maybe $37, maybe $36, maybe $32, and they're getting cut like that. Now we're not talking people that are working from home. We're talking about regular people that are working 7 hours a day and paying the same parking and the same gas as they were doing eight. I think that's a massive problem. And how do you quantify it?
Yeah, and I agree. And I think the other trend that I'm seeing as well is benefits not being, you know, paid as well. And it's funny how quickly this has all changed from just a few years ago when it was hard to find anyone. I still think another issue that's related to all this is the training and education of people coming in to replace those people who are leaving. And that I think will continue to be a challenge for a lot of companies, finding the right talent. If people had a choice of, you know, if as a hiring manager, and I've hired a lot of people over the years, and if you see 100 resumes and nobody's qualified, you're not going to hire anyone. You're going to say, hey, we can do this. I do that myself. I enjoy doing the research. So if I can't find a research analyst or somebody who really has a passion for our business coming in, I'm not going to hire them. And
Dan, this is one of the things I pointed out the other day is that this is not a new problem.
It isn't.
Okay, and it's gotten much more severe. I mean, if you look at what happened in Flint with all those kids that got poisoned from the lead in the water, that was not because the lines that had been perfectly safe for 100 years suddenly became dangerous. It was because the competent people who ran the water plant left,
right,
and the people who they brought in to replace them weren't competent and didn't understand what they had to do technically to prevent it from happening.
That's a great analogy, Carl, because that's absolutely what I think is going to happen in other industries.
Yeah, and it's everywhere, and that's really dangerous because that's the kind of thing that produces economic dislocations.
It's what we're already seeing, and we're seeing the same thing. You know, I'm seeing the same thing even in receiving reports and information where there's a lot of typos, even though we have spell check and grammar check, and there isn't the same caliber, if you will. And some of it, I think, is sort of that training that isn't there. But it is scary to think that the people who are taking over some of these positions don't have that level of expertise.
Well, Chief, you know, Dan and Chief, it's the thing is that there's a lot of inertia in organizations when you build something with a lot of competence originally, there's a great deal of there's a flywheel effect. And when you lose that competence within your workforce, the little edges, the cracks around the edges show up right away. You know, things like you're talking about, you know, you get a report and there's all these typos and grammar mistakes and stuff like this in it. But the really bad stuff usually doesn't show up until you exceed a certain critical mass of incompetence.
Right. I absolutely agree.
Why is it, before we dash, I got to, tell you a little bit about this guy who died, because it's an interesting lifestyle that not many people have today. But let's leave that for a second. But it seems like if people have something to do, not everybody, I mean, that's why they call it work, right? You don't necessarily want to do it. But at the end of the day, people at Pullman were pretty damn proud when that finished car went off the line. And the people, when Audrey's dad used to tell me all the time, we drove by the Hancock building, that a lot of those steel girders, he's the one who drilled the holes in them, and they were in the right place, and that building wasn't coming down. I mean, there needs to be a certain amount. I mean, Bill Moriarty was on a couple of weeks ago talking about how people in highway construction, both the people who work for the state and the people in those firms, they love it. They're innovative. Well, all of a sudden, you see a big hunk of crap, and 3 years later, there's a beautiful highway there. They think they did something. I mean, there's a lot more to this. You have to feel like you're doing something. I mean,
Chief, how long was the Jane Byrne? I just drove through there a couple weeks ago.
But I was going to say, I come in. I've been doing this for 40 years. I can't wait to get here and find a spread where it's mispriced and I can put it on for my clients and make something where they maybe didn't think we're anything there. I don't have anybody that I know of that I could hire tomorrow. A few people that are here that have that kind of passion and say, you know, I want to build a bridge better than it's ever been built before.
You know what? I haven't driven through Chicago in the last decade where there weren't cones up there.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, the thought that I have when you mention that is, and I agree, you know, that sort of level of pride in your work as well, or that sort of, and one trend that's happened, and I'm not sure if you guys are aware of this, but I have several younger clients who work for some of the big tech companies and know a lot of people in the tech industry and even in the biotech industry here in Boston, which is pretty prevalent, and a lot of them have thought about leaving to go to different careers, and here's why. That their level of competence and their training and their skill set that they've developed has already been phased out, if you will. So they may have been good at one area of technology, but now the new area of technology that's taken over is not their expertise, so they have to start all over again with someone else. So AI might be the new trend. Well, who has had experience in that? Some people, you might think, hey, they're techies, so they can just move from that area to that area. Not the case. So I think that's going to be another trend, is that transference of skill set into what's happening. And then those people who get pushed out because they don't have those skills, or, you know, their skills have been already, they're extinct, if you will, that they're not needed as much. So there is that. I think that trend is going to be accelerating as well, especially in technology.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was, you know, but that's been the reality of technology all the way back. I left college because they were training me to do something that I discerned was not going to exist by the time I got a degree. And by the way, I was right.
Right. No, but true. But now we have what's the percentage, as we were talking earlier, as I mentioned earlier, that those tech names represent what percentage of the overall market now? I mean, it's a much larger percentage. It impacts the financial markets, I think, to a larger degree, because we see such a huge percentage. We see such a large majority, if you will, in the technology industry, and less so in, say, manufacturing or some other industries that have really been the steady eddies over the years.
Oh, absolutely, and that's why when the dislocations come in technology, they tend to be so huge, because
good
it's
point.
Yeah, it's an earthquake instead of a little tremor.
Yeah,
like the dot-com burst.
Yeah,
the dot-com. Yeah, exactly.
Well, Dan, just on an economic base, we talk about the people that, you know, took the stay-at-home stuff for a long time and maybe overestimated how long it was going to last. But if you were talking about 2020, say it happened right away with COVID, we're now 4 years into it, and we look at what's happened to the CPI and put a real number on it. If somebody was working at home, say the lady's working on, for whatever reason, it could have been the guy, and all of a sudden now you actually do, like Carl was mentioning, you're taking the kid for a walk or something, but by and large you need baby care, child care, uh-huh, 2 days a week, 3 days a week instead of five. Maybe the old junker car is in the driveway, you only use it once in a while. Maybe the train fares have gone up, parking sure as hell has gone up. Just to make somebody even, if they were still in the same house and, you know, where they can get on the train in Boston or here or someplace or drive to work, just to make somebody even, I'm going to say they need a bump in pay of 15 to 20 grand just to be even to where they were coming to work 4 years ago. And I think a lot of firms that are making the call to come back are forgetting that part of it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, there's no question. And the thing is, if the we look at management, that's one of the, that's really one of our top indicators of whether we're going to invest in a company. And we talk to management, and we stay in touch with management over time. And I do think that when a management team leaves, and I think Carl mentioned this earlier, is that all of a sudden the follow through, if you will, of the people coming behind, unless they've set a very good standard or they've really planned their exit strategy well to have a succession plan of people that can fill their role and have a similar, you know, keep the culture of the organization, all that. Unless that happens, you're going to have a different, not only have people with less experience, but the culture is going to change. And now imagine, like when we were younger, we always went into the office and we always had a certain amount of camaraderie with our peers. And in the investment industry, investment management industry, we also had a lot of sharing of ideas, you know, that I don't think you have as much in the, when people are working remotely. Now we have a different dynamic that you know, we've had several years of people not in the office, not having that dialogue as much, certainly not being able to have the same level of dialogue as you do face to face.
Carl, what you were here, I don't know if Dan was, when Matty Weber was still a producer. What was his comment? Yes. His comment was, I'm in the office, I got to talk to these goofballs around the water cooler when I could be vacuuming the rug. And I'm like, Matt, you're supposed to be talking to people at work. You might learn.
Well, that's the whole point.
That's the whole point. Yeah.
And why you all have a stake in the company you're working for, right?
Why do you think I bought an unlimited amount of coffee for the coffee machine to break room for everybody at the company that wanted to drink it?
Right.
Well, the lady upstairs from me that moved, she's working from home, I think, in San Diego now or something, but she had three or four cats she'd feed every day at noon. And everybody's got the side hustles of people who are working at home. Was cool. Were legendary.
Walking Well, they're still there. I mean, Rover is the side hustle kind of central hub for people that, you know, going out of town, need somebody to watch the dog or the cat or whatever.
We just had a revision go by that I missed it. Do you expect these numbers this month being this low or that last month being that high to be a revision from both of these months to smooth it out a little bit or no?
But again, the revisions that come in the establishment survey don't affect my analysis because I don't use that set of numbers.
Are there revisions in the household or no?
Well, not in the unadjusted.
Okay,
which is the number I use. Okay, I mean now. And here's the thing is that they're all negative again. Okay, August revised down by 81,000 and September revised down by 31. Now, the August number, remember, originally was reported as plus 159. So now they revise that down by half?
Well, it's kind of a lot.
Well, that's a heck of an error, yeah. Don't you think?
Yeah. Hey, real quick, we got 1 minute. I'm sorry to burden you guys with this, but we talk about all these different alternative lifestyles, right? I'm not talking about LGBT, but this gentleman who with Wake I'm going to, interesting guy. He went to Marist. His family was very, very strong. Mom and dad, family was really tight. They live in St. Linus Parish on the south side, which is in Oak Lawn. And so he went to Notre Dame. He was an incredible rugby player. He was a guy that could, for those that don't know, when you play rugby, wherever you scored a touchdown, you guys know more about this than me. You got to kick the extra point from there, right?
Right.
So it might be all the way over on the side where you got to like to bend the thing in with the wind a little bit. Well, he became a kicker. He wasn't the biggest, fastest guy, and he also was. Who's the guy? The first guy in the scrum where the ball goes in there? He's supposed to get it out of there before the rest of the guys get a chance to wrestle. Is that easy to hooker or something? They call it first. The guy who's actually is the skilled job to get it out of the scrum between your legs before the rest of the guys have to fall on it. Anyway, but he played rugby. Probably was 45, maybe.
But his
lifestyle choice was, I grew up like this. He married a little girl from the south side, terrific lady, still married. Said I'm gonna stay in the same parish. Maybe bought a little bigger house than his dad had or something. I want my kids to go to Marist and Mother Macaulay because it was good for me. Was always active in the church at St. Linus. I mean, not a holy roller or anything. And his kids went to Notre Dame and they all got terrific jobs and every one of them is a real solid person. I mean, the lifestyle choice that many people have done that, I'm not so sure that's not the best one or one of the better ones. You know, the family was around there, the cousins and the aunts and uncles.
It's stable, it works, and it tends to produce productive citizens.
Yeah, that's what I was going to use that exact word, productive. And having a support network like that is really important.
But a kid's got to, you know, walk to school, go home for lunch, the same things that he thought were really, really important in his development. There's a park there where kids can actually call each other and show up to play baseball or football, and the parents don't have to take him everywhere. I think we're missing a lot of that, and he stuck right with it. You know what? It worked out well for him. It really did.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wonder if more people shouldn't, you know, everybody's got to do what they got to do. But, I mean, people say, how many times do you have people having babies somewhere? Well, where's her sister and her mom? Well, they're 5,000 miles away. Well,
Chief, it's incentives, and we've destroyed so many of them.
Yeah, anyway, guys, thank you. Good stuff on the numbers. You know what? We've had guys piling on together. I think I'm making myself obsolete here. You guys are pretty good. I mean, yesterday, you and Luda sure as hell didn't need me, Carl.
We had all kinds of fun yesterday, didn't we?
Yeah, it's a... I mean, you know, again, Kevin now is all over it. I mean, he thinks we should really cross-pollinate guys a little bit. You know, not every time.
Different perspectives.
But, yeah, and get different stuff. Dan, good stuff. Enjoy yourself in Boston. Are you going to go to Pulcari's deli and all that
stuff? Are there restaurants? Yeah. Maybe, while I'm here.
God, anyway. All right, guys, have a good weekend. Next week, Kyle, we're on Tuesday about the elections. That should be interesting.
Oh, that'll be a lot of fun. That'll be the real day that you know, we have that, and then of course, yeah, we'll see what happens that night.
Well,
we also have the Fed meeting next week. Right.
That's
after
right. That's right. We do. Which ought to be
25 basis points, most likely. But
well, you know, up until this employment report, I would have said zero. Now I'm not so sure.
Yeah. Well. The 10-year rate's down almost half a point today, so it's a big deal. Yeah.
Big shock, right?
Yeah. All right, well, we'll talk about it next week, guys. Have a good weekend. SP Futures up 27. NASDAQ up 86. Good job, Ricky, with everybody on. Back on Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.